Hello, and welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, my host, Evan Sider, and joined by co-host, Brendan Kleen. You can follow me on Twitter, at East Sider. You can follow Brendan on Twitter, at Brendan Kleen 14. We're joining you right after the Thunder-Suns game, and we were talking about right before we started recording, Brendan. No surprise here. The Suns lost tonight's game, and it was a blowout loss. Even though they did make a comeback, they were down by only 8 points in the fourth quarter there, with 35-22 third quarters, led by Mikal Bridges and Jamal Crawford, which we'll get into later. The Suns fell 118-101. They're now 2-11 on the season, 0-6 on the road. There's so many questions to answer, Brendan, but more so on the general team, but we'll just stick to tonight's game to keep it concise. What were your thoughts on tonight's game?
I thought the first quarter was unacceptable. Just flat out, you can't give away a game in the first 6 minutes, and it would be one thing if this was an anomaly to see that type of lackadaisical start, but that's been routine this year. And I just, you know, there's plenty of ways to lose games that are acceptable, I guess. The Pelicans game, they got beat pretty thoroughly on the scoreboard, but I think they competed. It was a similar problematic first quarter, but I think they gave some energy throughout, and it looked good. That you just can't, you know, 19 points they were losing by already by the end of the first quarter, that quickly sprouted up to 26. And I mean, we saw exactly what ended up happening, which is you can fight as hard as you possibly can in the third and fourth quarters, but if you dig yourself that big of a hole, there's very few teams in the league that are ever going to win a game where they're down by 30 in the first 15, 20 minutes of the game. And I think, especially with the talent deficit the Suns are going to have most nights, there's just no way to do that and come out of it alive.
Yeah, it was just, like you said, an embarrassing start to that game. It was over in the first 6 minutes, and that's been, like you said, typical of the Suns so far this season, which is a disturbing trend that continues. Which might even contain a Wednesday against the Spurs, which the Spurs blew them out the last time they played, so that'll be interesting. But for me, I guess I'll start off here with my free throws, if we might as well go into that.
Yeah, go for it.
But for me, it's going to be Mikal Bridges, and I touched on it a little bit at the beginning there, but I don't know how this guy's not going to be starting in soon. I mean, I know realistically it probably won't be until December at the earliest or January at the earliest, but 13 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal, 2 blocks, plus 13 in 26 minutes. The guy just makes winning plays, Brendan, and I just don't see how he's not seen the court for at least, I think 26 minutes is realistic for what he should be playing every night.
Yeah, he was incredible tonight in so many different ways. I mean, just broadly, philosophically, if you will, like he's the only young guy on this team, I think, that you see make mistakes and recover mentally and literally in the midst of a play. I mean, he has the length to recover on defense in a way not a lot of players in the whole league can, but that's what made him such an enticing prospect, especially on defense. But even besides that, playing with the effort, it just shows up. And we've talked night in, night out about this team, how you kind of just cross your fingers going into a contest if the effort's going to be there, if they're even going to play up to the energy level of their competition. And Bridges, I think, is one guy you always know will. So that's just a breath of fresh air every time he steps on the court. But especially on the court, the ability to just attack. He creates mismatches so easily, whether that's on defense. He was guarding Dennis Schroeder for most of the time he was on the court tonight. They went to the point book look quite a bit whenever Isaiah Kanan wasn't on the court, and even at times when Jamal Crawford was on the court, you'd think he'd be defending a point guard, but for 10 years now, defensively, Crawford's had to be hidden. So Bridges being able to step up and defend the point guard for the Thunder was incredibly valuable tonight, and it was a big reason the Suns were able to fight back. He just continues to show new things every time he plays. And I agree with you. I mean, I'm not somebody who usually is super picky about who starts versus who's just playing the most and getting the right lineups together, but I think when you see how weak this team is to start games every night, it kind of does start to beg the question of a starting lineup change, which we haven't really seen all year.
Yeah, outside of Ryan Anderson being completely out of the rotation after starting 2 games ago, which is a sudden change but not surprising at all, I think we could be in line for something soon if the losses continue to pile up. But What's your second, or what's your free throw?
Mine would just be the third quarter, kind of tagging along with Britt, as he was the main, one of the main catalysts in that. Just crazy. I mean, it was almost as lopsided as the first quarter was in the Thunder's favor, and it wasn't like it was a fourth quarter where it's garbage time and the Oklahoma City had all their backups out there. That was, I mean, you know, everybody versus everybody, starters on both sides. So I think it was really, really nice to see. TJ Warren was battling on the glass to kind of make up for DeAndre Ayton's difficulties, to say the least, on that end against Steven Adams. I thought TJ Warren did a great job on the inside. He was against Patrick Patterson for a lot of that period. Obviously Bridges, but I think Jamal Crawford needs to be mentioned in there as well as part of that third quarter run, making tough shots. He made a crazy pass to Bridges cutting on the inside. Just, it wasn't quite a no-look pass, but he saw him out of the corner of his eye and just threw a bullet, caught Bridges in stride right under the rim, and he was just making smart plays, really accentuating why he's what we were kind of hoping when he was brought in, that the very least that he'd be able to do. And I think when you add the clutch shot making as well for him at the end of clock in a couple situations, it was just, I think, the best Jamal Crawford game we've seen. And he was, besides Bridges, probably the main catalyst in that third quarter. And I guess one other thing is DeAndre Ayton played the entire frame. So he was able to get back on track, even though he was struggling against Adams. He played that entire third quarter, was able to be a little more aggressive, played some smarter defense, and I think he deserves some credit there too.
I think if you're in a room with James Jones right now, you'd be saying to you, and that's the reason why we signed Jamal Crawford.
Yeah, I think so, but maybe 11 games too late.
Exactly, but like you said, 17 minutes, he produced tonight 13 points. But for me, for my second free throw, it's going to be like who you mentioned there just a few moments ago, TJ Warren. 10 of 14 from the field, once again efficient tonight. He's maintaining his efficiency, which he has from last season and throughout his career. 21.6 rebounds, 2 steals on the block. I think compared to last year, Brent, he's way more active defensively than he was last year. He, trust me, still has his lapses from here and there, but he seems way more active, and I love it so far. And he's not only trusted his three-point shot a lot more, he was 1 of 2 tonight, but his defensive instincts seem to be getting a little bit better. Not much, but incrementally better. And if there's one guy, obviously Devin Booker is the best player on the Suns, Brendan, but if there's been the most consistent player on the Suns this year, I think there's no debate it's TJ Warren.
Yeah, I think you could have even made that case last year, considering how he was able to stay healthy, played higher minutes at the beginning or throughout last season than he was at the beginning of this season. Now he's back up there at 40 minutes again tonight. I think Igor is realizing that he, like you're saying, is so steady, but he's been that kind of player for a while now where, you know, there are flaws. There's less of them this year than there have been in the past. There's still flaws though. But he doesn't lack for energy, and he doesn't lack for consistency, which I think are two, shockingly, after all this time, still big concerns every night for the Suns. So I agree. I think TJ's been, this is the second straight game he's been the best player on the Suns.
Now, where are you going to go as far as your second free throw?
Mine's just a little bit along. Actually, I segued myself right into that one. It was going to be a little bit of a take, I think, for tonight, even though it's not necessarily a point. But I think it's becoming kind of undeniable, and it kind of loops into everything we've talked about. And I think going into the year, I probably would have said that the Suns' three best players, my expectation would have been that it would be Booker, Ayton, and Ariza, or at least I think that would be the hope. But I would say, and I would throw it back to you to push back if you disagree, but I think right now the three most valuable players on the Suns are Booker, Warren, and Bridges.
Oh, I totally agree with you there.
That's pretty crazy. I mean, it isn't a crazy thing to say, like, at, you know, in context, watching the games like we do, but if I had told you that in July, I think that would have been pretty shocking.
Yeah, especially just how early we are into the season, how established Mikal Bridges has made himself. That's the thing. Like, he looks just like, if you swapped him out, I mean, it's pretty easy to say because he's quote unquote the most NBA ready prospect alongside a guy like maybe Luka, but he was a guy where you could easily just throw on the belt, take off his Villanova jersey in the national title game, just put a Suns jersey on, and he'd be able to produce right then and there.
Yeah, his switching today was insane. I mean, the more that they let him play like he played with the Wildcats, the more comfortable and productive he's getting. It's crazy to think that you're quietly trying to cater your system to the 10th overall pick that was just drafted in June, but when they were at their best today, they were switching and recovering like madmen and moving off the ball in pick and roll situations. And that's exactly how Villanova plays. That's exactly what makes Mikal Bridges so special as a player on both ends. And I think, you know, the Suns are kind of looking like a team that needs more of that.
Yeah, he's the exact type of guy you put next to Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton too, as far as the glue that could hold that together, as far as both guys being a really big minus defensively and him just showing through his length and his instincts. But before we go any further into our flagrant foul segment, I want to tell you guys really quickly about our Locked On NBA Twitter account. If you're not already following them, at Locked On NBA Net on Twitter, it's where you can find guys like me, Brendan, David Locke, John Corrales, Adam Mares of Locked On Nuggets. There's so much good content out there from so many good podcasts. If you're not listening to Locked On Suns, if you're listening to the other podcasts, you're just tuning in for the first time, hello. But just want to tell everyone, Locked On NBA Net, if you're not already following them, make sure to go follow them, because they have everything right then and there, live content, live reaction from every single game and every single practice. So Locked On NBA, make sure to follow them.
Start with the flagrant fouls. I gotta come up with one that makes sense, because there's a lot of places to go once again.
No, I actually have a take, so I might mind if I start off with one?
Yeah, go for it.
All right, for my flagrant foul, I don't want to get too doom and gloom here, but I can't wait till December 15th if it's for this reason, because Trevor Ariza, just his effort, sometimes is just pathetic. And I don't know, the very start of the game, he was one of the main culprits for the effort, too, which from a veteran leader is really disappointing. He finished with 8 points tonight, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, a steal and a block. Sure, he stuffed the stat sheet a little bit, but outside Devin Booker, again, he was one of the worst in plus-minus, second to worst of Booker. And he just seems like a guy who's coasting along, just trying to get his $15 million, and he's not really helping out. So I think if you're James Jones, and if you're not going to trade Josh Jackson, this is my second point here. Josh Jackson, by the way, I knew those 2 threes he put up, they were wide open threes. I knew they were going to miss. It just didn't look right when he came out of his hand. His shot isn't looking too good. He had 2 points tonight, only like 7 minutes. Those two guys, I think, are the prime candidates if there's anything right now to shake up this roster. If you're trading Josh Jackson now for a point guard, or just waiting until December 15th for Trevor Ariza to then trade for a point guard using his contract. So I think if there's anything to shake up this roster, it's either one of those two options. And I think those are both realistic at this point, because both those guys, to be honest, have been not good at all this year for the Suns. They've been, quite honestly, maybe two of the worst players in the entire roster.
Yeah, it's I agree with you completely on Ariza. I think if we didn't have that – did you see that clip of LeBron throwing his foot up to try to kick the pass?
No, I didn't.
Okay, well, there's a video of it was like somebody, you know, oh, tell me again, LeBron tries on D or whatever, and it's like a driving kick out to his man in the corner, and he just literally throws up his foot. I think if we didn't have that video going around right now, we'd have something similar for Ariza, because he's been one of the least – competitive vets out there this year on kind of those make good or whatever, show me the money type deals that went out this summer. And so I think you're exactly right. I mean, I don't know. It's kind of weird. It's going to be just an interesting aspect of this season in general with all the 1 year contracts that were signed, that what the trade market looks like for those players, where the team trading for them could lose them in a year, but they also, you know, kind of get that advantage of getting a guy that they could go over the cap to re-sign, or just have that comfort built in with a full season of playing with them. It'll be interesting, but Ariza is going to be one of the main targets. So I think the Suns are probably counting down to December 15th just as much as you are.
Now, really quickly, I don't want to get too into the hypothetical trades here, but don't you think, since we haven't even touched on Jimmy Butler trade on this podcast, which I'm sure we will later on this week in more depth, but after Jimmy Butler was traded to Philadelphia, don't you think they're on the cusp of making another move to replace Dario Saric in that starting lineup? And there's a guy who is right next to a guy, Jimmy Butler, on the wing at the 4 with Joel Embiid and Trevor Ariza. You just move him for TJ McConnell and just some salary filler. I think that makes a lot of sense.
I think it makes sense too. I think if I'm the Sixers, I would want somebody on a longer term deal, which is one of the reasons that that was obviously one of the teams I was thinking of when I said just a second ago about, you know, how do these teams gauge giving up assets for somebody that they that could easily walk? We don't really know what Ariza's preferences are. I would imagine he wants a long term deal next summer to get some security after getting his money this year. But yeah, I mean, I don't think Fultz is coming in a deal like that, but I think McConnell, if that's the target, I think that could easily get done.
Yeah, so what do you think about your flagrant foul after my take there?
Yeah, so my flagrant foul, I think, is it's got to be, aside from Trevor Ariza and Isaiah Cannon, who I think we've kind of beat into the ground talking about the point guard stuff at this point, but to me, it would just have to be Devin Booker. I mean, I know hamstring injuries. I think he's fully recovered from the hand, but and I think he was to start the season. But I think, you know, compounding that with the hamstring, which is something we know athletes always say lingers for a long time, and especially for sports like, you know, basketball and baseball where you're playing every night, I just think it's super tough to recover from. And I think we're just seeing the lingering effects of that. The Grizzlies game might have been Grizzlies and the Celtics games might have been kind of false hope that make you think, you know, maybe he's there. But I think it's just going to be a nightly thing for a while of him feeling it out and figuring out where he can pick his spots. And it's just so glaring when he doesn't have the support, even on a great 10 of 14 shooting night from TJ Warren, only 21 points. There's only so much, you know, the other guys can do. This is obviously the best player on the team, somebody who's supposed to be making plays for others, knocking down shots, really doing everything on offense. And the team kind of just falls apart without him. So it's tough to put the blame on him because, you know, it shouldn't be that way where he has to do so much for this team to even be competitive. But still, 7 of 18 from the field, didn't get to the line, continues to really not get to the line like he has in the past. That team worst minus 32 tonight, that big third quarter run happened largely without him in the game. So just warning signs that continue to be there that I think are going to be there until the hamstring goes away.
Yeah, Booker, I feel like maybe it might be more so just me pointing it out, but I feel like when they get in the deep holes early, I feel like he presses, especially as far as scoring the ball, because he missed a lot of playmaking opportunities from Mikal Bridges in the corner or Ariza in the corner. I feel like when they get down early, it's just Booker trying to put even more weight on his shoulders.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, if he had been able to play with more patience, if the beginning of the game hadn't gone so poorly, I think Terrence Ferguson to me is a guy he can easily take advantage of. Really thin framed player, somebody who relies more on athleticism and quickness, whereas Booker kind of matches up perfectly because he is so big and is so, you know, dynamic with the ball in his hands. I think that would have been a better matchup than most he would have had most nights, but it just didn't. He wasn't able to take advantage of it in a way I think we would have normally seen, whether that's the injury or pressing or a combination of both. I just think, you know, if he's even up to his usual, if he just got the straight stat line that he's averaging on the season and was fairly efficient doing it, I think the Suns are pretty close in this game.
I totally agree with you there. Before we go any further, what did you want to tell us about the Locked On Network?
Well, yeah, I mean, I want to actually tell you guys to not just about, I mean, Locked On NBA show, make sure you're liking and subscribing over there, giving them some love just like you give us. But also just in general, tell your friends about the show. We'll continue to listen, but not only listen if you aren't subscribed, if you're checking in on Bright Side of the Sun and just listening in here and there, you can get this show on your feed, make it a lot easier to make it a part of your daily routine. We know that we're the only Daily Suns podcast out there. So, you know, consider subscribing. If you like what you're hearing, give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Great way to support the show outside of the normal way of just listening. But if you really like it, go ahead and do that. And then something we haven't talked to you guys about in a while, but we'd like to continue to tell you about, is just advertising opportunities. So you hear these ads on the show every day. You, I'm sure, are pretty familiar with what kinds of things we usually do. But even if it's not in that realm and you want to reach out, Evan and I on Twitter is probably the easiest way. The Locked On PHX Suns Twitter account. However you want to do it, really. However you can get a hold of us, we will be there to talk. We would like to make these ad opportunities as personalized as possible, since this is such a local show for Suns fans in particular. So Yeah, just hadn't brought that up in a while and wanted to let you guys know that we are, of course, open to talking. We've had some good feedback, but we want to keep that conversation open. So let's my stat to watch is I was trying to hold some of my Ariza stuff for this because it was the one I picked like halfway through the game, and I didn't want to give it up. But 34.3, which is his three-point percentage this year. He's a guy that hasn't been as high in like the 40% like you would think with his reputation as a shooter, but 34.3% would be the lowest for him since he played for the Hornets, which is 2011-12 season. But, you know, the league's gotten a lot better, so the average has gotten a lot better. This year, that putrid number would put him, first of all, below the league average, but for wing players, according to Cleaning the Glass, it would put him in the 39th percentile. So for somebody who came in with a reputation as a marksman, having played with those Houston teams the last few seasons, he has been below his usual standard, not just below his standard, but really just below average as a shooter, really not providing that at all. And the Suns really, really need that from him. And tonight, like you mentioned, 8 points, he was 2 of 6 from three, just really not spacing the floor like you would have hoped at all. And I think that's quietly a pretty big reason for the Suns' struggles on offense.
Yeah, they paid Ariza $15 million to do. And we thought Mikal Bridges wouldn't be doing this early, but it seems like a switch roles as far as that goes. Cause like we talked about earlier, I think Mikal Bridges has already proven to be the third best player on the Suns, and Ariza has really disappointed so far. But for my number, it's going to be actually one, just simple number one. And that's the number of blocks DeAndre Ayton had tonight. It was a really just disgusting effort from him tonight as far as rim protection goes. I think Steven Adams is probably getting in his head a little bit, but there were some points, I know Kellen Olson tweeted out, where he was like a bystander. He was like a fan just watching guys oohing and aahing as they dunked and went by him. I just didn't understand why Ayton. I know we talked about this a lot last year for pre-draft stuff and the draft, but man, it's a disturbing trend over the past week or so where Ayton just doesn't rim protect at all. And when he does, it's only after he gets led into on the sidelines, I guess, because it was record timeout. But man, it's really concerning just to see his effort on defense and the rim protection, and really just everyone around him know that he's not going to protect for them, so they have to try extra hard, and when they blow by him, they know he's going to make the basket. It's just a defeating feeling.
Yeah, it was I completely agree. I think you know that I agree, but the one block he did have was pretty nice. He had he volleyball spiked it. He stayed attached to Adams and then raised up for, I think it was on Schroeder, blocked a layup. But yeah, one play. And I think with him, it is so hit or miss where the plays where he does block the shot are really the only ones where his rim protection is successful. He's not a guy that's impacting shots like the best defensive players. So I think blocks for him are even more of an important thing to watch than for most guys. So I think that's definitely a good one. He was really, I mean, I mentioned him in that third quarter for my free throw, and while he was pretty productive in that quarter and was able to stay on the court, didn't get into foul trouble like he has against some more physical bigs like Adams in the past this season. But his main work, and even in the third quarter, came when Nerlens Noel was in, which I guess you could say give him some credit there, because Noel went to work on him in their first matchup. He was able to keep Noel contained a little more today, but still no match for Adams. Really not the player that he needed to be tonight at all.
Yeah, it just says a lot about it, just the growing pains of the number one pick, even though people thought immediate production, all-star production. It's a project. Ayton's a project. I hate to say it, but we kind of called this in the pre-draft process. He's not going to be a guy that's a walking dominant force right out of the bank. It's going to take time. So
yeah, I think the real lesson is every big in the NBA, no matter how exciting you think they are to watch as college players, are projects. I mean, Jaren Jackson, how excited were people about him? Marvin Bagley, no big in this year's draft is really consistently productive on a nightly basis for anything close to a good team. I mean, Wendell Carter's starting, playing high minutes just like Ayton is. He's probably been the closest thing, but the Bulls are almost as bad as the Suns, if not worse. So it's just, that's a lesson that I think we're learning the hard way, that fans who were expecting the world out of Ayton are learning right away.
Another example too, Mo Bamba, the only like 15 minutes per game off the bench for Orlando behind.
Yeah, exactly. There was a lot of them, but I just, you know, even Karl-Anthony Towns, 5 years into his career, whatever it is still not there on defense, not there consistently on offense. He has his own issues, but I think there are lessons to learn when you pick a big man and you want to win right away that it's probably just not going to happen.
No, I was looking at the numbers tonight just from the overall wins, loss totals for the Suns so far. Like I said, 2-11 on the year. This is their 8th out of their 11th loss so far where they've lost by at least 17 points. They lost by 17 tonight. They lost by 18 against the Lakers. And every other game, they've lost by at least 20 points. So that disturbing trend's continuing as well. So any thoughts on that number? Just do you think that's going to be improving anytime soon? Or do you think this is a hole that's going to be really hard to get out of unless a move's made?
Wait, what was it? Sorry, I missed what you said.
Yeah, no problem. Just the number was just they've had 8 already of their 11 games where they lost at least 17 points. Non-competitive games.
Yeah, see, I had some optimism because they missed out on 20 today, but I didn't realize they had a couple more that were just right about 20. No, I think if they can come out and play better in first quarters, it could change, but we saw what happened the last time they played the Spurs, so they're not going to have anywhere to go on Wednesday if they come out of the gates like this again. So, you know, it's part of it is effort, but obviously a big part of it is the point guard trade that we can't get out of talking about every night.
Yeah, it's a never-ending process at this point. But is there anything else you want to hit on today?
No, we'll talk to you guys tomorrow for probably, like Evan said, hitting on maybe some Jimmy Butler news and some other loose ends from around the league, come up with something to stem the tide of these same blowout episodes, but maybe prep for the Spurs game as well.
Yep, that'll do it, guys. We'll talk to you then.